Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Tourists, go home! We got that story, plus NATO's birthday party. But first, it took James a few days for this to hit the mainstream American media. At first, all I could find was, of course, overseas, Al Jazeera and the others. But it has now hit MSNBC. Lancet says at least 186,000 deaths in Gaza could result from the Israel-Hamas war. More than 186,000 deaths in Gaza could result from the Israel-Hamas war. According to an analysis published by no stranger to Israel criticism, the Lancet Medical Journal. The analysis, which was published in the Lancet's correspondence section, was not peer-reviewed, but it underscores the difficulty of accurately documenting the conflict's death toll. The official Gaza death toll since October 7th is at least 38,000, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. The researchers pointed to the number of eventual indirect deaths in recent conflicts, which ranged from 3 to 15 times the number of direct deaths. Even if the conflict ends immediately, there will continue to be many indirect deaths in the coming months and years from causes such as reproductive, communicable, and non-communicable diseases, they wrote. For their estimate, the researchers added 4 indirect deaths for each direct death reported so far in Gaza, concluding that it's not implausible that of that estimate to up to 186,000 or even more deaths could be attributable to the current conflict. James, it even reminds me as I'm reading this, what do they say, you know, one death's a tragedy, but hey, 186,000, these are statistics. Counting the death toll in Gaza is a monumental effort that's become increasingly difficult, with international human rights groups and news reports saying the official count is likely incomplete. Authorities struggle to identify the bodies buried in mass graves or body parts pulled from the rubble while suffering from starvation and dehydration themselves while trying to dig for bodies. Israeli government agencies have previously accused the Gaza Health Ministry, which is run by Hamas, which isn't at all propped up by the state of Israel over the last couple of decades, of inflating the death toll. President Joe Biden similarly suggested at one point that those numbers are not to be believed. However, human rights groups, news organizations, and even Israeli intelligence services have previously considered the health ministry's numbers to be largely accurate. Israel's assault on Gaza after Hamas's attack has been catastrophic. James, again, this has been going on for a long time. The news reports say, oh, this thing since August, but really we're talking about these things since the early 2000s, hell, the 90s. United Nations experts say famine is spreading throughout Gaza, and they accuse Israel of carrying out a targeted starvation campaign against Palestinians. Much of Gaza's infrastructure, of course, schools, hospitals, housing, water, electricity supplies, have been destroyed or damaged on purpose. The fine folks at Decensored.news have further coverage on Haaretz, famed Israeli journalist outlet, further confirmation that IDF was using what's called the Hannibal Directive, meaning we'll kill our own guys to make sure they don't fall into the hands of the enemy. And the Hannibal Directive seems to have been massively used on October 7th. Meanwhile, James, I was talking about Lavender on my morning show recently, the AI machine directing Israel's bombing spree in Gaza. Think of it sort of as a 21st century Hollywood punch card system automating that Holocaust. And Israel Tech Guard, killing free speech online. So James, I was airing today our New World Next Week episode 198 on my stream. I do an hour where I'll play Monarchy, New World Next Week episodes from this day in history, since we've been at this for a while. It was from a decade ago today. The lead story was Israel steps up offensive against Hamas. How much longer can this all go on, James?
Unfortunately, I think we're going to see the answer to that question. And unfortunately, the answer to that question will come at the cost of countless lives. And I say countless because, yes, this 186,000 figure, of course, is just a figure that we cannot, I mean, it's just an estimate, and it's based on deaths that will occur. So don't take it as written in stone. But it's one way of gesturing towards the fact that we can't get accurate figures of how many people are dying or in what way, because this is an ongoing, I won't say war or conflict, because that sounds like two sides equally lined up on a battlefield shooting at each other, which is clearly not what's happening. This is, as we've said before, this is the ongoing Holocaust in Gaza. And to put that into perspective, I was thinking about that 186,000 human lives figure. It's such an overwhelming number that it's difficult to wrap your mind around. So I was trying to think of it in terms of, say, Iraq, which, again, we can't say, how can you possibly say, but something like a million Iraqis dead as a result of the post-9/11 weapons of mass destruction lie that was sold to the American public and what the American military went in there and did. So I was thinking, oh, well, this is about one-fifth of Iraq. The Iraq War. We are already at the one-fifth level. Well, actually, no, because then I started to think, well, actually, if you put it in terms that are relatable, the Iraq has a population of, what, 46 million, and it's spread out over 430,000-plus square kilometers, whereas the Gaza Strip has a population of 2 million and encompasses 365 square kilometers. So when you put it in those terms, actually, this is about per capita, this is about four Iraq wars that are taking, that is taking place and still
since ongoing. Since October.
Since October. It's, again, the mind boggles at even trying to put this into perspective. And unfortunately, as you say, when is this going to stop? The latest word that I'm seeing here on antiwar.com, Israel orders the evacuation of Gaza City. On Wednesday, the Israeli military told the residents of Gaza City in the northern Gaza Strip to evacuate and head south, signaling its assault on the city will escalate even more. And what is this about? Let's call it for what it is. This is ethnic cleansing. This is an ethnic cleansing campaign that's taking place under our nose. The most blatant violation of all of this supposed international war legalese that was set up in order to stop these types of war crimes, crimes against humanity. But here it is. Israel controls 26% of Gaza, potentially paving the way for Jewish settlements. The Israeli military has taken control of 26% of the Gaza Strip and is building bases and paving roads in the areas to ensure long-term occupation, which could lead to Jewish settlements, Haaretz reported on Monday. It's absolutely unspeakable. It is ongoing, and we will continue to cover it as it continues to unfold.
As we've covered it for over a decade now. James, of course, like the late, not great Z-Big said, right? It used to be easier to control a million people. Now it's easier to kill a million people. And it's a statistic, and it goes by in just a couple of months, so less than a year. James, the only jokey, funny, bright side to any of this is I was watching that decade-old video. Man, your hair wasn't even graying at all back then a decade ago today. What a time to be alive. Generals gather in their masses for our second story on New World Next Week, episode 561. Yeah, these giant organizations, United Nations, World Economic Forum, NATO, they're going to save us from ethnic cleansing, right? No, they're going to have a birthday party. NATO leaders gather for 75th anniversary summit. Grabbing this from Al Jazeera. Again, everything we talk about always included in the show notes. United States President Joe Biden, who is still in quasi-power, as I can report for you so far. Things went pretty quickly last week, eh, James? You and I were talking off mic. We were discussing old Trudeau and Brandon, but things went a lot faster for Sunak, as we do our best to document the new world next week here in the kingdom. This little party's just, I think, their last day is essentially kind of wrapping up as we're recording this right now, James. United States President Joe Biden will host leaders of NATO in Washington, D.C. as the military alliance marks 75 years since its formation amid security threats arising, no, not from Israel, but from the Russian invasion of Ukraine and China's growing assertiveness in the Asia-Pacific. The summit, which runs from Tuesday to Thursday, largely expected to focus on reassuring Ukraine of the alliance's unwavering support, of course, and don't forget billions of dollars as, you know, our water's all poison and the economy's destroyed. But yeah, billions of dollars more for Ukraine. After Russia pummeled, and they have to include this, after Russia pummeled Ukrainian cities with missiles on Monday, hitting a children's hospital in Kiev. Again, imagine if they were speaking about Israel in these sort of terms. At least 31 were killed in these Russian attacks, again, of which we are not fans of. It will be the first international appearance for new British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, whose Labour Party won last week's general election in a shocking landslide. Meanwhile, Grimmy McGroomerson, President Emmanuel Macron of France, faces a political dilemma, and I think Al Jazeera is misusing the word dilemma, after a leftist bloc emerged as the largest player in the National Assembly after France's Sunday elections. He's also going to be present. It's a lot of the same lame ducks, James, that I was joking about trying to smooch on Meloni in Italy recently. NATO, if you don't recall, was formed during the Cold War in 1949 to counter threats posed by those guys that helped us win World War II, the evil Soviet Union. Article 5 of its founding treaty commits members to a collective military defense, under which an attack on one member is considered an attack on all and effectively keeps its enemies at bay. R2P, right, James? The alliance has since grown from 12 members to 32, with its newest member, Sweden, joining in March. James, you have a ton of related links on this story, so I'm assuming you've got a lot to say about NATO at 75.
Oh, unfortunately so, and how I wish we could consign NATO to the dustbin of history where it belongs, but here they are, 75 years, going strong and growing all the time, so we have a lot of stories along those lines. Of course, what is one of the main things they're talking about right now? Of course, Ukraine, the ongoing and escalating conflict there, propelling us towards World War III. And people might have seen that story coming across their news wires last week about how US was going to tell Ukraine they're too corrupt to join NATO. But I feel that was a red herring that was thrown out to distract people from what is evidently actually taking place there. And I'll throw in a link to a recent article. Report: NATO expected to tell Ukraine its path towards membership is irreversible. Which is to say, yeah, okay, maybe you need to do some tinkering and it's not going to happen overnight, it's not happening right now, but you are going to be a NATO member. Which, by the way, remember, was one of the bright red lines that, well, even before Putin, Russia has drawn for a very long time. So that's not an insignificant little detail. Libertarianinstitute.org has a post up by Kyle Anzalone. NATO needs 35 to 50 additional brigades, reporting that the North Atlantic Alliance's new battle plans will require members to produce hundreds of thousands of new soldiers and military equipment for a potential war with Russia. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg claims the alliance has 500,000 soldiers at high readiness for conflict in Europe. Great. Wonderful. Well, how about the hope and change there in Britain? Yay, we got rid of that Sunak guy, and this Starmer guy is coming in to shake things up and do things differently. Well, as The Guardian is there to tell us, Starmer to urge NATO members to boost defense spending amid UK review. So exactly more of the same. Imagine my shock. But as much as all of this is concerning to me as a human being, let alone as a Canadian who presumably, I guess, is in some way a member of NATO. At any rate, I wish I could escape this by going, say, to the Pacific Ocean, where clearly the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has nothing to do with the NATO to launch four projects with Indo-Pacific partners, including AI and cyber, and, oh, you better believe that involves my adopted home and native land of Japan. Japan's tacit NATO membership acts as bridge for global security, talking about the way that there's a special partnership program that Japan has set up with NATO, in addition to all the bilateral RAA, reciprocal access agreements, that they're signing with all of the various NATO members. So yes, Japan's definitely signing up for World War III. Yay, 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 locked and loaded. But interestingly enough, who is coming along to poo-poo and naysay that? Our buddies at the Council on Foreign Relations, that's right. Foreign Affairs just published this the other day, Why NATO Should Stay Out of Asia, which is a head-scratcher until you read through and you get down to the punchline. And essentially what they're saying is, you know, this in-your-face military alliance, let's go in with guns blazing. Maybe that's not the way to do it. What we really need to do is to basically convince all of these potential partners in the Asia-Pacific with showering them with development money and other such things, and to get them on board with soft power rather than the hard power of guns blazing. So it's just a different strategy. There are left and right wings of the bird of prey that is the deep state that is trying to control the world, and I think the CFR and Foreign Affairs represents the left-wing side of that. Hey guys, we'll do it with our are gifts and money and other such things, with the barrel of the gun sort of hidden behind the velvet glove. So I think that's what that's about. But anyway, I'll throw in the link so people can read it. Suffice it to say, a lot happening. And, you know, I haven't heard anything coming out of the conference so far about the new battle space terrain of NATO, which is, of course, outer space. But I'm sure they'll have stuff to say about that and other nifty new technologies for warfare that will make World War III even quicker. As that old adage has it, I don't know what technology World War III will be fought with, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. Well, maybe we are heading back to a Stone Age. Anyway, keep your eyes out and on the developments at the NATO conference.
Yeah, James, the CFR, the sort of intelligence agencies of technocrat media, it's like, let's maybe do the war kind of cold right now instead of our usual guns blazing hot. Those are the two choices, cold or hot war, would you like? Now, like a lot of Americans, I need work on my geography, but even I know that the Atlantic and the Pacific are two different oceans. How could you get the one on the other ocean? And as I had said, this conference is going to see, I do need help on geography. The NATO conference is going on in D.C. James, that's like close to my neighborhood. It's not already in the future when you and I were talking off mic earlier. I had the idea that, oh, this is going on overseas. They're already waking up to their Thursday. So no, Brandon has not woken up yet on Thursday morning to host this final meeting as we are taping this Wednesday evening. It is July 10th, 2024. You know me as James Evan Pilato from MediaMonarchy.com. James, what do we want? Travel ban. When do we want it? Now? Tourists go home. Barcelona's protests against over-tourism, which is a new word because Open Office puts a little red underline underneath it. Thousands of protesters marched in Barcelona over the weekend against over-tourism. It's just one word, not hyphenated. Nearly 3,000 people took to the streets on Saturday. More than 140 organizations, including neighborhood associations, ecologists, and housing activists, marched under the slogans, "Enough! Let's put limits on tourism and tourists go home," so reported Catalan News. Some protesters sprayed tourists sitting at restaurants with water guns. Try that in a small town. Locals are protesting over the lack of affordable housing. You might get beat up for doing that. Locals are protesting over the lack of affordable housing, which they blame on short-term rentals, James. That's a euphemism for, of course, the economy booming, but also economy destroying Airbnbs and Vrbos. Short-term rentals and overcrowding caused by the cruise industry. In late June, the city announced it will ban all short-term rentals by 2029 because, of course, the state has to step in against unfortunate expressions of free market. Barcelona had protests against tourism in the past. These are the same problems we had pre-COVID. They're just coming back a little bit bigger than they were before because there's more people traveling. Of course, the boom all around the world of post-COVID reopening up. So said Yves Marceau, vice president of product for G Adventures. He said tourism is spread beyond the city center. They're talking about it like it's like some disease. In 2022, the director general of Turisme de Barcelona was fired by the organization's City and Tourism Council, which represents the locals. Barcelona is one of the most popular destinations in Europe right now. It's crowded. It's a challenge to get anything, to get transportation, hotel, anything, says Marceau. G Adventures has reduced the number of days its tours spend in Barcelona to limit its contribution to over-tourism. We've been trying to limit the number of days we're in Barcelona as a group, said Marceau. Around 26 million tourists came to Barcelona in 2023, generating 12 billion euros, that is 13 billion American bucks in spending. Barcelona, the latest destination in Spain, to see a rise in protests against over-tourism. Protests have erupted in the Canary Islands, Balearic Islands, Mallorca, Menorca, Malaga. A major point of frustration for locals have been the growth in short-term rentals. In Malaga, the supply of short-term rentals rose 24%, while demand rose 31%, according to AirDNA, which looks exactly like Airbnb. And it's not just in Barcelona. Alaska tourist spot will vote whether to ban cruise ships to give the locals a break. And from CNN, this Italian vacation hotspot is turning tourists away as it runs out of water. James, I am no stranger to growing up in what I've called festival towns. And it's places that, of course, big lifeblood is the tourism, but as a local, you sort of resent a lot of it. And as I used to say in my college festival town, you'll get that in a festival town. James?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny you bring this story up because over-tourism may be a new word, but it's probably going to be the word of the year in Japan. In fact, that's been a major story here in recent months is over-tourism. Oh, my God. Record numbers of tourists coming to Japan. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, yes, post-COVID boom. I think people are generally gradually starting to forget that, oh, yeah, it was just a couple years ago I was being locked in my house and told I couldn't even visit grandma. But yeah, there obviously has been quite a boom in tourism since then as people decide, you know, maybe now's the time to check off that bucket list tour around the world that I was hoping for. But in addition to that, people may or may not have noticed the yen has been absolutely plunging lately and they cannot prop it up as much as they try. So it's extreme. I shouldn't even be saying this because I'll be encouraging more. It's extremely cheap. If you got U.S. dollars, you come to Japan. My God, everything's so cheap now. Anyway, that's going to contribute to it as well. So there has been a massive boom in tourism. Luckily, I'm in a part of Japan that no tourist would even think of visiting, so it doesn't really affect my day-to-day life, but it's definitely been a thing here, and there's been a number of incidents, including there was this convenience store that has basically Mount Fuji in the background, and for whatever reason, it became this Instagram phenomenon. Everyone had to go to this store to take the picture of the convenience store with Mount Fuji in the background. Why? It's a picture that's been taken 8 million times. But anyway, to the point where they actually put up this big black mesh so you to block the view so that you can't see Mount Fuji and take the picture anymore. And tourists started poking holes in the mesh so that they could stick their camera through. And it's just, I mean, yeah, it's disruptive to say the least. And I think that, especially in Japan, having been here 20 years and knowing a bit about the culture, seeing the disruptive nature of people who come here and just kind of barge through is encapsulated brilliantly in an Onion article that, hey, sometimes they're right. Tourist immediately breaks 34 sacred local customs while deporting airplane in Tokyo. So anyway, yeah, it's definitely a thing here. And it definitely speaks to the fact that people are, I think, reading the writing on the wall, and maybe rightly so, because as we head into this digital ID, whatever is coming, the ways that they'll be able to control you and your movements and vaccine passports and all of that stuff that we know is certainly on the agenda. I think a lot of people are saying, well, now's the time to get my travel in, and who can blame them?
James, there's this tipping point between the benefits of something becoming a tourist attraction and then the complete nuisance of you not being able to function anymore in your life. There's a house in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where because of a certain TV show, people love to throw pizzas on the roof. And for a little while, this is Breaking Bad. He's mad at his wife, throws a pizza on the roof. People come and reenact this. The people who own the house had a brief like, oh, sweet, this is a nice little tourism boost. Oh, my God, this is destroying our life. They had to put up fences around it at some point, which, of course, didn't stop it. And I think they ended up selling the place because they couldn't deal with it. I forgot, James, you and Brock and myself have actually chatted about this. We've, of course, got our ongoing chat that we have. And I've seen these articles while I'm just looking at video game news. Japanese angry at American tourists coming to buy our retro video games. And I was going to joke with you, you better watch out. Yo, Pilato is going to come back to Japan and try and buy even more of our records and tapes and things. Interesting turns of events, James. It's kind of funny. I live very much in a not festival town anymore, very small town in rural northern New Mexico. The most that we do see, and we kind of put this together ourselves, oh, obviously, people from Colorado know this as a place to come do a mountain bike tour. So that's not so bad. I'll take it. Nobody's throwing pizzas at us yet. That is New World Next Week, episode 561. James, newworldnextweek.com is the place for people to get a Corbett Report shirt, such as you are wearing right now. Have we sold out of all the old logo guys yet?
That's I don't know. We're going to have to check on that. But like, let's promote it anyway. Buy the last ones before they're gone.
So that's the old Corbett Report logo. Those shirts, those are on their way out. And, of course, the new shirts are on their way in. New World Next Week, of course, also has the DVDs, the USBs, the radio plays. Any number of ways to, again, support our work, as you have never seen an advertisement in our near, 30-plus years of work. James, I actually sent that decade-old episode to my mom today, just as a way to kind of point out, as my constant in the background of saying, hey, what's going on in Israel? Hey, what's going on in the news? Showing her that, you know, sometimes the stories don't seem to change, but I think it also shows we've been on top of the case for quite some time here in what we call New World Next Week. James, there it is, 561, buddy.
James, that was 5 years into New World Next Week. So even as young and youthful as we look then, imagine. Oh, yeah, go back to the very first episode. But thank you for feeding into my midlife crisis. I got an email earlier today from someone who said that he hasn't tuned in to me for a while, so he was just on my site taking a look at my stuff, and he said it was a nostalgia trip. And that feeds into an email I got recently from someone who was telling me she was watching me when she was just a fresh, wide-eyed college student. Now she's in her 30s, a professional career woman. I really am getting a bit old, aren't I? Well, anyway, just goes to show we've been here talking about this stuff for a long time, and there's a lot in the archives, which is why I think those USB archives are valuable for people preserving this information. But anyway, let's keep doing it again and 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 again, including next week. James, thanks for the stories.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.